Good afternoon. About a year ago, I was talking to Nick, and we were. I called him up just to find out some information about a method that he was working on, and he told me about this symposium for Malcolm, and he invited me to give a talk about for this session, and immediately I knew which talk to give. It was this one right here, and because this particular research was very influenced by my time while I was at University of Georgia. This particular phenomena that I'm going to be talking about here, we had seen it before at the university at the Savannah River site, but I think it's because of my what I had seen while I was at the University of Georgia that I was able to apply some of the look at it a little differently, and we were able to come at it and view it a little differently and interpret it a little differently. My colleagues here, I worked with Fred Moltz from Clemson University, and also Heino Nietzsche from UC Berkeley. And here we have Malcolm, and I also have a picture of his book up here. I use this book quite a bit. It's really, if you don't have a copy of that book, it's very useful. The study here, it was a field study that was, I did not set it up. It was set up before I was came to the site, Savannah River site, and it was a lysimeter study where they put up these carboys, 52-liter carboys, about so big, about 52 liters big, 51 centimeters into the ground. They inverted the lysimeters, cut off the top, filled them up with a vadosown soil. And then they put in, as you can see, I don't have a pointer, but they put in, the mouse. Oh, here we go. Yeah, there you go. The plutonium right here, and various sources of plutonium. Plutonium exists in four oxidation states, and I'm only going to be talking about three of these particular ones today. Left in the field for 11 years, and one thing I'd like to bring to your attention here is, over the course of the 11 years, grass grew into these things, so wheat, or weeds, if you will. And, one thing that's about more than 99% of the plutonium, when it comes into the ground, exists in the oxidation state of plutonium 4 when it hits the ground. And plutonium, for the most part, is immobile. It stays stuck to the ground. The other thing that I want to bring to your attention is that plutonium 4 is very similar to iron 3. So if you, for instance, the iron 3 and plutonium 4 have identical charge to radius ratios, as you can see here, and the first hydrolysis constants are very similar as well. I'm showing you the log K constants right here, and this is DFOB is a siderophore. And this is it right here. I'm showing you this because I'm going to show you an experiment later on where I've complexed it with the siderophore. Here's a picture of it right here. So it behaves very similarly to iron 3. And again, 99.9% of all the of plutonium when it hits ground behaves like this. But unfortunately, we spend 99% of our time studying that little bit that actually moves, so we don't really get to spend too much of our time studying this one. So in this particular experiment, what we did is we had a series of test tubes, and we added plutonium-5, the mobile fraction, into a tube. And this is the sorbed plutonium, and we're looking at the oxidation state of the plutonium. And we've added plutonium onto this lysimeter soil. I've taken a little bit of the soil, and we're watching the oxidation state of the plutonium. And this is it changing the oxidation state over time. We've added 5, and over time, this is the plutonium 5, and in its place, plutonium 4 is growing in place. So we're seeing a surface facilitated reduction of the soil right on the surface of it. And looking at the aqueous phase now, what's in the aqueous phase is the plutonium exists. What little is in the aqueous phase exists as plutonium 5. So again, looking at the lysimeter soil, if we took a core right down here, and looking right down this core, so this is the distance below the filter, so the distance below just this portion right down here, and this is the normalized plutonium concentration. So here's this has a concentration of 1, and we're going backwards here. And this is as we're going down here, it's getting less and less concentrated. You can see that within 4 centimeters, the concentration is decreased 4 orders of magnitude. So that's over 11 years. So very little movement of plutonium over a very short period of time. And then what happens is you see this kind of an elbow. It just decreases very slowly after that. So Fred Moltz has done, he modeled this, and he assumed that a KD model, and the KD model assuming a KD of plutonium 4, and he modeled it there, and he see we don't get a very good fit at all there. And then he assumed that it had assumed the model of plutonium 5, and it was a very poor fit here. It would all the plutonium would have gone right down out the bottom of the lysimeter. Here what he did is he assumed that there was a constant conversion of the plutonium 4 to 5. And that's what we saw in the last slide that I just showed you. And here he put in the constants from that last slide. And you can see that we have a reasonable fit there. Okay, so there's a 4-order decrease in magnitude within four centimeters of the source, and that the KD is really a poor representation of the data. So what you just saw there was this data right here, this plutonium 4 nitrate, and that's this right here. And we had those other lysimeters that show essentially the same type of information, that a lot of retention occurred very close to the source. But that isn't the whole story. In fact, we saw some plutonium also moved upward, and it moved up towards the ground, upward. And so this is the phenomena that I was telling you that other people have seen at the site. We've seen upward mobility, and this is not good news. When people are burying waste, they don't want to see it moving upward against towards the biosphere. And what they've attributed this to in the past has been to diffusion and to evapotranspiration. And so that's what Fred Moltz from Clemson modeled it. And here's some equations. I'm not going to go into it. But we have terms. We did the kinetic. We have kinetic terms to account for this and evapotranspiration. And this is accounting for all of that. And you see, it's really a very bad fit. Evaporation and diffusion does not account for that phenomena. And as if you recall, we had plants in there, and so he redid the model, and this number two here includes roots and a lot, because plants take up, of course, a lot of water. And that number two line there really did not account for a lot of evapotranspiration with water. And then we did business with hysteresis and so forth, and we could not get that to improve the model. Without it, making the bottom worse, because we had a very good handle of how the bottom was behaving without it tweaking parameters on the top. So we came up with a tentative conclusion that plutonium, not just the water, must be moving upward in the plant roots. So we did some experiments with some plants, and we did these experiments. We used plutonium and we complexed it with DFOB. Plutonium, when it moves up into plants, is always complex once it's in the plants. We cannot get it in the plants. It will not go into the plants if it's not complexed. If it is in the plants, and what little that does get into the plants will always be complexed. So in this case, we use the siderophore, as I mentioned earlier, put it in. This is a hydroponic setup, and on top of it, we have soil. And then what we would do is cut the plant up into sections, 2 centimeter sections, and then measure both plant velocity and then bound, and then the plutonium velocity. And we were getting water velocities in the order of 290, these are the bounding ranges, depending on light intensities, of between 290 and 810 centimeters per hour. So these are, the water is just flying through these, plants. And then, really surprising to us, the plutonium velocities is moving through there. And again, in your mind, you can think of it as iron, because it's behaving very similarly to is what iron would behave as at velocities of 170 to 300 centimeters per hour. And again, what we would do to get the area here is we'd measure these graduate student Shannon Thompson would measure these the areas of these inside where the xylems. Okay, and so then what we did was we modeled it, and this number three line right here we measured, put in different parameters in there, and this number three line is the line that he actually would be the input from his experiments. And so that generally matches, if you will, to some extent, the nature of what we see the data doing. We thought that that was reasonable. But more importantly, it does not change the fit of the downward trend. So we're capturing a change in the upward movement, but that downward line does not change. And that's what we were looking for. All right, so in conclusion, I'd like you to guess which one of these quotes did Malcolm make here. Given a choice between two theories, take the one which is funnier. Or did he make this one? Whenever you hear the consensus of scientists agree on something, reach for your wallet because you're being had. Well, this third one. Too much work and not enough fun makes Johnny a boring boy. Which one of these did Malcolm make? One, two, or three? All three? Three? I heard three, and then I heard all three. Thank you very much.
Well, we don't need another soul for any questions. Yeah. One or two. Go.
Is it your mother is the best medical model?
Is it the best? Actually, the way we're using the model was not so much to fit it, but we're using it primarily for hypothesis testing. So in the we're trying to evaluate the test primarily to see how the plutonium was moving.
So you are not fitting anything, any parameters? No,
it wasn't for parameter fitting, no. But we could turn knobs to evaluate parameters. I would call it for parameter testing, hypothesis testing. Excuse me.
One more. I don't think it's likely that DFOB chelation of plutonium would be actually found in soil to a significant extent.
Okay.
You use corn. Corn secretes phytoserophores, which would allow transport across the membrane, perhaps. I don't know anybody's proven that plutonium phytoserophore complexes are absorbed intact the way that ferric phytoserophores are absorbed intact. But dicots don't have that function at all. They use a reductive uptake of iron. So you tested a dicot against this and found a completely different outcome that would further support the model of a siderophore, phytosiderophore complex uptake idea.
Okay, thank you. I didn't know that. Thank you.